Hello and welcome to the SRNA Ask the Expert podcast series, Community Spotlight. My name is Lydia Dubose and I moderated this podcast. SRNA is a nonprofit focused on support, education, and research of rare neuroimmune disorders. You can learn more about us on our website at wearesrna.org. Our Ask the Expert podcast series is sponsored in part by Amgen, Alexion, AstraZeneca Rare Disease, and UCB. For this podcast, we were pleased to be joined by Ilana Williams. Ilana was originally diagnosed with transverse myelitis in 2006, followed by an MS diagnosis, until in 2018, she was diagnosed with NMOSD. You can view the full bio in the podcast description. Welcome and thank you for joining us today. Would you mind just briefly introducing yourself?
My name is Ilana. I'm 54 years old and I live in Alexandria, Virginia.
Awesome. And in regards to the onset of your disorder, it may have been many years ago. What age did you start experiencing symptoms? What were the initial symptoms at the very beginning of your journey?
Well, it started, I guess, when I was around 34, 35. And I didn't know what was happening to me either. I just was having episodes of, I wasn't feeling good, numbness and tingling, little vertigo. And it was all different times where like these episodes would occur. And everybody, you know, first, you know, one time it happened during the summer. So everybody's like, oh, we wonder if you got West Nile virus, or, you know, there were all these speculations as to what it could be, because I would have the episode, I'll refer to it as episode, and then it would resolve itself. And then 2 months later, or, you know, again, I was experiencing something. So it just seemed like one thing after another, after another.
And then in response to those symptoms, you know, what happened next? Did you seek medical care? Did you seek treatments? What was the response from any physicians that you worked with at that time?
Well, it was really frustrating at first when the episodes kind of started and I was going to the doctors. I would, because it wasn't anything that was continuous or I wasn't being treated for anything, I would go to the ER. Of course, they were like, you know, well, you're healthy. There's nothing wrong with you, you know? So, you know, they would try to send me home with pain. If I said I was in pain, you know, they kind of observe me and say, okay, well, you know, we can give you this for pain, that for pain. At that time, I didn't know the difference between like neuropathic pain or neuropathy and just pain, because they would, and I'd say, and I'd always preface it and say, well, it's pain, but it's not like pain, like I cut myself or somebody stabbed me. It's like, it's coming from inside and I don't know where it's coming from. And so there's actually one episode where I had gone to the same ER within the same year, I think like three times. And it just so happens that the same ER doctor was there and he had seen me previously. And so by the third time I was there, I heard him out in the hallway speaking, and they were kind of talking about me like I might have been like I was an addict, like I was just there to get medication, you know? And I was like, look, when he came back in, I just lost it. I just said, I am not here for pain medication. Yes, I'm in pain. And I'm sorry, I can't tell you specifically where it's coming from. And I'm just as frustrated as you are because you can't tell me where it's coming from. Yeah. You know, please don't dope me up, because, you know, the few times before, like the one time before that, they gave me medication. It made me feel good while I was there. And then when I left, as soon as I got home, within a couple of hours, I was right back to feeling the same way that I felt right before I went there. And so I thought, this isn't doing me any good. Like, this is like a momentary fix. Like, this is not helping me long term, you know? Yeah. And so after that, I mean, I went through bouts of, I would go through these little episodes, feel bad, feel better. And I just kind of like was sucking it up. And then finally, there was one time where I wasn't feeling that great. And my husband came in and he said, I was still in bed. He said, are you going to get up and go to work today? And I said, I can't. And he said, what do you mean you can't? I said, I can't move. And he said, ah, ha, ha, you can't move. And wow. So he says, let me come over and help you, you know? And so because he kept saying, come on, just get out of bed. And I said, I am sitting here, laying here, thinking I'm trying to move my legs to move over the bed. And like mm-hmm. nothing was happening. And I'm freaking out because I'm thinking, why is nothing happening? Like, and because the night before I didn't have any issues, nothing was wrong. So when I went to bed, I was fine. And he was kind of looking at me like, okay, so this all happened just overnight. And I'm like, oh, yeah, well, I don't know what to tell you, you know? Over, he helps me kind of stand up and that kind of thing. And that's when we decided I needed to go to, again, I went back to the ER and they were like, yeah, you know, they did x-rays because they're like, you know, are you sure you didn't like, you know, break something, sprain something? That's why you can't stand. Is it one leg? Is it your foot? And I was just like, I don't know what to tell you. I said, I can't stand, you know, or to walk. I said, I can't even walk. Like they had me, the nurses had me on either side and they were helping me like move from like the bed. I had to go to the bathroom, you know, that kind of thing. They finally came back in and said, you're going to have to see a neurologist. We can't find anything wrong with you. I did. I was able to, and of course I started making calls to see a neurologist. Of course, everybody's like, yeah, we can see you in like 6 months, 9 months. And I'm like, 6 months? Like, I couldn't get out of bed this morning. Are you serious? Mm-hmm. You know? So then I ended up taking the first appointment of the first neurologist that could see me, the earliest that he could see me. And so when I went to see him, you know, he said to me when he came out and he said, all right, come on back. And he says, but I want you to walk in front of me. I want you to walk down the hall to the exam room and I'll follow you in. And as soon as he came in, he says, I know exactly what you have. And I was like, okay, wow. He hadn't even looked at me, you know? Yeah. He's like, you have transverse myelitis. He says, I'm pretty sure of that. He goes, we're going to have to run some other tests, you know, blood work. So I need to do a spinal tap, which now was lumbar puncture, you know, but mm-hmm. when he said spinal tap, I was like, oh my God, you know? And so we went from there and I was hospitalized for a couple of days just so he could run some tests and just, you know, get everything done, do MRIs and stuff like that. And again, it would come and go. I would have good days. I would have bad days, you know, but I was still, there were times where I was somewhat mobile and then not that easy to be mobile, get around, that kind of thing. So I went back to work and that kind of thing. And then what happened was after that, it just seemed like every episode, it seemed like every couple of weeks, like every 4 weeks or so, every month, I was experiencing something. Finally, we got to, and I was going back to the same neurologist. So he finally said, I mean, they had me doing over-the-counter steroids. I would have these episodes, you know, and of course, you know, people at work knew that there was something going on with me because after a while taking the steroids, I would walk in and I had the moon face, you know, they're like, oh, wow, something's going on with her, you know. And then after I had several episodes after that, he finally said, okay, I think it's something more. I think you're falling more into the MS category. So we need to do more blood work, you know, and just exams, MRIs for lesions, that kind of thing. And so they did blood work. They sent it off to NIH. And he says, okay, well, it does show you have, and the MRI also confirmed that I had lesions on my entire spine from, I don't know all the technical, the C, whatever, but like from the back, my lower back all the way up to my brain stem. And I also had a couple of small lesions on my brain.
Wow. And at that point, did, you know, of all the testing that they were doing, did they do a blood test for Aquaporin 4 for the Mog antibody at this point, or
at that time? No, it was probably around 2016. And
okay.
At that time, I was shocked when he said MS, because I thought I only knew of one other person that I worked with, and his wife had MS, and they shared some really heart-wrenching stories about, you know, the stuff that she went through. And
mm-hmm.
so I was just like, wow, I know nothing about this. And so I just kind of went with it, you know. He's like, this is MS, you know. And of course, at that time, MS was the only, well, it was the only thing that was brought to my attention or mentioned to me. So when I looked it up online and tried to do any research, again, it was terrible. I was just like, oh my gosh, you know. And again, it varied with so many different situations and so many different people, you know. There were so many different circumstances. Yeah, so there was no talk of like, you know, well, we have to do any more tests or anything. And then what happened was I was put on a preventative medication for MS. I started on that and I took that for a couple of years. And then after I had my, what I call my significant relapse, which was in 2018, I ended up in the hospital. And so honestly, I don't remember much from being admitted to the hospital up until the time where I came. They said I was kind of like in a comatose state, 5 to 6 weeks. I mean, I would become coherent. My mom would say I could tell when she would walk in, because she said, you didn't open your eyes. And I would walk in and I would put my hand on your hand and I'd say, if you know I'm here or you can hear me, squeeze my hand. And she said, and you would squeeze my hand. So she said, I knew you knew I was there. And then after being in the hospital, so finally when I kind of came out of that state is when they started talking to me. And when I came out of that state, I couldn't speak, I couldn't read, I couldn't write, I was paralyzed from like the chest down to my toes. I had a catheter, and that's when they started talking to me, saying, you know, we ran some tests, and during that time, that's when they figured out that I tested positive for aquaporin 4 positive. And then they started talking to me about NMO, asking me if I knew what it was. And I was like, nope, nope, nope. Don't know any of this stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. So quite a journey, quite a few, you know, kind of the different paths that you went on before finding the right diagnosis of NMOSD.
And it was also difficult during that time period, because between having that relapse and ending up in the hospital, I was also fighting breast cancer.
Mm.
So I had gone through, previously I'd gone through radiation, I'd gone through chemo. Yeah, it was just like, wow. I told my mom when I finally could speak, I was like, this really stinks. I'm like, I'm just getting like punched left and right, you know?
You're like, when can I catch a break?
Yeah.
All of this. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. So once they did identify NMOSD for you and you were hospitalized, did you receive acute treatments at that time? Do you remember kind of what that initial reaction to NMOSD was?
Well, yes, I did. I was in the hospital. I was in the hospital just under 5 months.
Okay.
And that, while I was there, that included, you know, they had me on IV steroids. Mm-hmm. They also, prior to me kind of coming out of that state, they had administered one treatment to me. I don't know if I can say the names of the treatments. The treatment that they gave me, I had a reaction to it, and I was covered. My mom had pictures of it. I was covered from hives from like head to toe. And they were like, okay, well, they tried two treatments and I reacted the same way to both. And they're like, okay, this isn't working. Gonna have to try something else. Yeah, it's like, okay. And then I also had plasmapheresis at some point during that time. And again, I was still kind of in and out of it. So I don't remember a lot of this. A lot of it is just documentations from speaking to the neurologist that was working with me at that time, and my mom and pictures she had and that kind of thing. And then once I got to the point where I was coherent and able to stay awake, and they started then working on me in addition to that, also to physical rehab, just learning how to sit up, how to transfer from the bed to a wheelchair and that kind of thing.
Yeah. And what was your experience with rehab? You know, how long did you go through any kind of rehab therapies, and what kind of function were you able to regain over that time?
Well, while I was in the hospital in those 5 months, I was very frustrated. And I can fully empathize with people in that situation, because I know they were spending a lot of time with me and they were working very hard with me. And I mean, I'd gone from being a fully functional, healthy woman that worked full time, traveled, exercised, you know, was just mobile, to now all of a sudden, like, the big achievement was me being able to sit up in my bed by myself, you know? And so while I was in the hospital, they worked with me at speech therapy to get my speech back. I had to go through therapy to learn how to swallow, to make sure I wasn't choking on any food, making sure I could, you know, chew it and have it go down. And again, you know, I then learned how to transition from the sit up in the bed, and then transition from the bed to the wheelchair. And then they would roll me into the rehab center, and I would, you know, I learned how to go and stand up on the parallel bars, just to stand up on my own, and learn how to walk one foot in front of the other. And then I also learned, now it wasn't until, so while I was in the hospital, that's pretty much how I learned to do that stuff. And then I transitioned from the parallel bars to learning how to get in my wheelchair again. And then if I needed to, learn how to stand up and use a walker. And then I was released from the hospital. And then once I was released from the hospital, I came home and I had a medical bed here in my house. And then 2 years after that, I still went to outpatient therapy. And that's where I continued to learn how to strengthen, learn how to become a little bit more independent. I mean, like, the big thing was, once I got home and I had been going through therapy in and out, I remember the first time my mom, she was kind of helping me into the bathroom. And I said to her, I had a hospital chair in my shower bench. And I said to her, I want to take my own shower. And she's like, Alona. And I'm like, Mom, I'm like, I'm 50 something years old. And she's like, I'm your mother. I've seen everything. And I'm like, I know that. I'm like, but still, I'm a 50 something year old woman. I want to be able to bathe by myself, you know? And yeah. So she was so worried. She would sit, she would say, okay, fine, close the curtain or whatever. And she said, I'm going to sit out here on the toilet. I'm like, I'm going to help you, but I'm going to be right here if you need me. I'm like, okay. I mean, that was the biggest thing. Like, they were like, what's your biggest achievement? I'm like, I showered by myself, you know, and everybody's like, wow. And I'm like, it's a huge deal, like, huge.
Yeah. You know?
So, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So big transitions going from hospital to home, and learning how to do things again. And I guess fast forward to today, what does your today look like? Do you have current symptoms that you're living with day to day? And what does that look like for you?
It does. I am on full-time disability. I no longer work. I had spasticity pretty severely, and luckily that's gotten better due to help of daily medication. And then I still have numbness, like, in my toes all the way up to, like, up my leg, all through my calves, up to, like, my knees. That's gotten better, too. So that's also helped with my walking, because they also had me, when I got home, not only did they have me, while I was on the walker, using the walker, they had me in, they were, like, leg braces to kind of help me for like help with drop foot and that kind of thing. I forget what they're called. Sorry. Again, brain fog. And then brain fog. And so I don't drive anymore. And so luckily I do live on my own, but my mother lives close by and she's been my angel. Like she comes by every day, you know, I hear her. She knocks on the door. She's like, "I'm here." And I'm like, "I know." And she'll come in and she kind of helps me like with any like house stuff, just laundry. I mean, she's the one who takes me grocery shopping. She makes sure I get to all my doctor's appointments. And then I do still have a little bit of what they refer to as the MS hug, which is kind of the band around your chest. And it's not as bad as it was before. I mean, before it really felt like somebody was really constricting me. Now it's just, I know it's there, but it doesn't keep me from doing anything. And you get tired. I mean, that's the crappy thing. You know, I'm like, I used to joke at first, you know, like I'd say, "Mom, I just need to sit down for a second." She's like, "Oh, do you want to take a nap or something?" I'm like, "No, I just need a minute to rest." You know, I'm like, "I don't want to take a nap. Just give me a few minutes to rest." And I'm like, "This is terrible. Like I'm up and moving for 20 minutes and then I got to rest for like 5 minutes, you know." But it's getting better. It's
just taking it at a different pace. Yeah. Well, it sounds like your mom is an amazing support and really big help in your life. Can you speak to, you know, anything else that's been a part of your support system throughout learning to live with NMOSD?
Well, having an advocate, well, one, I've learned how to be my own advocate, which is really good. I mean, and through that, I've also kind of helped educate my mom more. So she is also my advocate. You know, she was always my advocate from the beginning anyway, you know, because I used to feel bad. I'm like, "Mom, I feel so bad. Like, I don't want you to be here." I mean, because she just retired when all this started kicking in for me, you know, and I'm like, "Don't you want to be like out traveling and all this other stuff?" And she would say, "I'm your mother. This is what I want to do. Stop telling me to go places." You know, I'm like, I'm so grateful. So yeah. But sorry, I went off track.
Whoa. No, that's okay. I was just asking about your support system.
Oh, and, yeah. So I mean, I like I said, I tried to educate myself by getting into support groups for NMO. And the nice thing now is what I've learned when I first started this process 5 years back or so, it seemed to me like it was very individualized. Like there would be a group here, there would be a group there. And so, you know, they didn't at that time, I didn't think that they really intermingled much, but now it's really nice because a lot of these organizations and support groups, they do kind of tie in together. They kind of mesh in one way or another, you know, like people from this organization or this group are familiar with, you know, this other organization, or if there's something going on here, like they know what's going on there. It's kind of like, it's almost like I wish our medical system was, you know, I wish that like all of our doctors would be cohesive and kind of working together more easily, you know, more in tune with each other. And I do really feel like a lot of the support groups that are out there that help teach us and advocate for us and teach us to be our own advocates are like that. And I'm really grateful for that.
Yeah, it's awesome. We have such a good community and our community of organizations that all work together really well. And yeah, we wish everything would work well together like that.
Yeah.
But along those lines, you know, how did you first find out about SRNA and, you know, what drew you to want to get involved in support groups and what's that experience been like?
Well, honestly, again, when I was diagnosed, my neurologist, he kind of handed me a book on NMO. And he was kind of like, I mean, we talked about some things. He shared some things with me, but he didn't go into like any like major detail, you know. So in that book, I mean, it kind of went over the, I don't know, just the everyday occurrences as far as like, you know, testing and medications and frequency and that kind of thing. And because the one thing he did tell me when he handed me this book about NMO and we had this discussion, he said, whatever you do, don't Google this. And I'm like, oh, okay, so what do? I go home and I Google it, right? And
course.
he's right. And at that time, 5 years ago, it was nothing good. Like everything that was coming up, I was like, are you serious? Oh my gosh. I told my mom, I'm like, I have 5 years. I have 5 good years. I mean, that was the, what was out there at that time. And
Yeah.
so things just kind of started coming up. I ended up at that time, there wasn't much focused on NMO specifically. A lot of it was just MS. And so I just started there. And then I kind of learned, like, when that NMO is not MS, I was like, and then I learned that there were more specific groups that focused on NMO. And one group just kind of led, getting involved with one group kind of led, people would say, oh, I'm involved in this group here, or that group or whatever, and I would just kind of see things and I would just kind of reach out. And at first I felt a little bit like a stalker because I'm showing up at all these meetings. They're like, geez, this lady's like everywhere, But I was trying to educate myself and get as much coverage and much of a field out there as I could, because I was also trying to learn. If I was hearing something different or new in one area or one space than I was with another. And what I started to find, luckily, was after a while that they were all kind of leaning towards the same, I don't know, advocacy, I mean, methods and that kind of thing. And then I started seeing more and more of the different people of all the different groups in all these different groups along with me, they're like, hey, I saw you in this group or, that group or whatever. And then when I first learned of SRNA, at first I thought because it took me a while to understand that because everybody kept saying disease, disease, disease. And I kept thinking, I don't have a disease. And they're like, no, it is a disease. I mean, it's something that requires treatment or, that is being looked, that there's still a lot of experimentation going on as far as treatments, blood work, whatever else is available out there. And then because sRNA also kind of covered a large umbrella, larger than what I was seeing in most, it took me a little while. I thought, whoa, this is like above me, I don't belong here. And then I learned that wasn't true. That wasn't true at all. I just put myself out there and got involved with a couple of the online support groups and just some of the patient day type things that virtual type things. And I liked the people. I liked what I was learning. And I was just like, yeah, this is good. This is where I need to be.
Yeah, that's great. So, kind of thinking about, learning to live with the diagnosis, and it sounds like you've sought out a lot of information and you've sought out community. What are some kind of tools that you've found that have helped you on your journey, or what are some tips that you've learned about living with NMOSD?
Well, for me, the biggest thing is educating yourself. And for me, that also meant putting myself out there, opening myself up to whatever was there. And then it was up to me to decide whatever I was receiving, if it was something that I thought, this is, I don't know if this is, I'm headed in the right direction here, that kind of thing. And it also helped me just like when I'm meeting my doctors and stuff like that, when I wasn't going to the neurologist and I was going to all these different doctors, now, I have this kind of setup where if I'm going to something that I think might be NMO related and I'm not going to see my neurologist, I still reach out to him and I say, hey, look, this is going on. I'm not sure, really sure, like if it's NMO or not, but it's new to me. And it is something that I think I should be checked in. And luckily I have a very good rapport with him and he has a very good demeanor and I trust him wholeheartedly. And he would say, okay, fine, no worries, you know. So it had been a while since I had an MRI or something. He's like, I'll go ahead and send over a script to have, you know, for the MRI or whatever else. And so what I was learning was I had to educate myself, because when I was going into these places that were not at my neurologist's office or with my neurologist, the people that I were encountering knew a lot less than I did, even though they were medical professionals, you know. Luckily, recently, I've even had people just be very honest with me. They would say, oh, I've heard of that. And the thing that gets me is, you know, the biggest thing I've learned from having NMO, that it's not MS. You know, yes, they do share some similarities or characteristics, but it is not MS. You know, when they look at me and they go, oh, yeah, that's like MS. I finally learned, Alona, let the hackles go down. And I just say, no, it's not like MS. It does share some similarities, or, you know, to MS, but it is not MS, and it needs to be treated differently. And that's also what I learned, having been on MS medication, that just because you're taking a medication to treat your disease doesn't mean it's a good thing. Because what I learned was, being on those medications was actually worse for me. It's worse to be on a worse treatment that is not designated for your disease. So now I go in, and a lot of times it's funny, if I go in and I have to stay the night or something like that, I mean, as soon as they walk in the room, as soon as they walk in with anything, the nurse or whomever, I'm like, what is it? Why are you giving it to me? Why do I need it? Why should I take it, you know? And I also learned that, in educating myself, that you don't have to accept everything that is being said or given to you, like in the hospital. You know, sometimes I'd be like, no, I don't think I need that. I don't want to go that route. I don't want to do that, you know. And so that's what I like about my neurologist, because when we talk about treatments and things to do, he'll say, you know, well, I was thinking about this from what you explained to me. You know, how do you feel about it? What do you think? You know, he doesn't just walk in and say, I'm the neurologist, here, take this, you know. I've learned that I don't accept that anymore. So I guess that's part of being my own advocate. I don't know. Educate
That's
myself.
I know that's something that so many people, might be dealing with who have NMOSD, is trying to decide, should they be on a long-term treatment, and how do you make decisions about what treatments you take, and how do you feel like you can make an informed decision about treatments? And it sounds like you've done a lot of work for yourself in that area.
And my neurologist has been good with that. And so I am on a long-term treatment. The treatment that I've been on, I've done very well with. And so, again, with all these new things popping up and coming out or becoming available, I don't, that's why I also want to continue to try to educate myself and just put myself out there and learn what's going on, because I'm the frame of mind, because I've been doing so well with it. I'm kind of the frame of mind, if it ain't broke, why fix it, you know? And I've heard people say, well, isn't it inconvenient? I'm thinking, it's my life. Like, how's that inconvenient, you know?
And have you, I guess since that, I guess 2018 relapse, have you had any relapses since then, or any
Knock
other
on wood.
exacerbations?
No, not NMO related. Not NMO related.
That's good. That's really good. And I know that's creating a plan of action is something that a lot of times people end up doing in case that happens. And is that something that you've done? Tried to prepare for if something like that happens, or prepare for how things might change over the course of your experience with NMOSD?
Well, I mean, it's something you don't want to think about, but it is something that I do think about, you know, because my mom's kind of in the frame of mind. She's like, don't worry about it. You worry about things you don't need to be worried about. And I'm like, Mom, I don't know how I just can't put it out of my head. You know, having been through what I've been through, and now being in a good place, I mean, if this were to change for me again, I'm thinking, oh, come on, seriously? Like, you know? And so I don't know. I try to do things like, you know, for instance, like now I live alone. I'm on my own. I'm independent outside of not working full time or not driving, but you know, that I can take care of myself. And I just try to do what I can as far as nutrition and health and medical wise or medication wise, you know, the best that I can to keep me on the right track. And now I also know too, when something, and my neurologist is really good. He always says to me, he says, you know your body better than anybody. He says, so if you think something's not right, I need you to tell me. Don't wait for me to figure it out, you know? He's like, don't be afraid to bring it up. So I'm good about that too. Now I'm past the stage of like every time something happens, I'm not spazzing out thinking, oh no, you know? Sometimes now I'm just kind of like, it's NMO, kind of sucks. You know, I'm good here. You know, I'm not downplaying it by any means. You know, but yeah, but I do kind of, I have a better understanding of what works for me and what I need and what doesn't work for me.
Yeah, that's great. What's something that you wish more people understood about living with NMOSD? Or living with a rare neuroimmune disorder.
Well, I mean, I feel so bad when I say this because there, I think to myself, you know, as tough as I've had it, there's so many other people that have it so much worse than I do. And so when I say it's not easy, I mean, everybody's like, well, life isn't easy, you know, but okay. But when I say it's not easy, I think part of it is not just when I say it's not easy, I'm not just talking about myself. I'm talking about the fact that luckily times are changing and there's more education out there and more treatments are becoming available and more people are becoming doctors, medical professionals are becoming more aware of what it is, you know? And so when somebody walks in, you know, they're just not, oh, she's hysterical, you know, give her Tylenol, she'll be better tomorrow, you know, that type deal. I don't know. It's just, I mean, and the thing is also when I say it's not easy physically. It's not easy. It's not just easy physically. It's not easy mentally. You kind of have to learn to balance the two, you know, because if one outweighs the other, it's going to be constant. You're going to be in a real struggle, my opinion, you know.
And what are, if you don't mind sharing, what are some things that you do to help the mental side of living with NMOSD? What are some things that support you or that you do?
Well, I mean, I try to, and my mom is really good about this too, you know, every day, like in the beginning, if we had a good day, she would look at me and she'd say, today was a good day. And I'd say, yeah. And she goes, you need to remember this. Today was a good day. And I'd say, yeah. So she had has really helped with me being appreciative of just having a good day, you know? I mean, and I, you know, when I wake up in the morning, I'm grateful that I woke up in the morning and I woke up and I'm not in any pain. And like, I'm already thinking about like what I'm going to do for the day. And the fact that I'm thinking about what I can do for the day because I can do it. Like I can get up, I can get dressed, I can go brush my teeth, you know, I can get ready to go grocery shopping. I mean, this all sounds like mundane stuff and people do this every day. Yeah, it does. But when it's taken away from you, and then you have to fight to get it back, you just appreciate it that much more, or at least I do.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's great. Well, as we're kind of coming to the end of our time here, something that we at SRNA are thinking about a lot is looking towards the future. This year is our 30th anniversary, and so we're looking back on the last 30 years, you know, looking back on stories, like looking back on your story and how far you've come. but then looking towards the future and thinking about what we're hopeful for in the future. So I want to ask you, what are you hopeful for the future?
A cure. And when, as people are diagnosed, no longer, and I having, it's nice that these support groups and advocacy groups are out there, no longer being told that when you're, that the only information that you're getting as soon as you're diagnosed is that you have 5 good years and then that's it, you know, because mm-hmm. I am past the 5 year mark. Yeah. Yay, you know, so, and I'm so grateful for that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I might only make it to 6 or 7, but I made it past the 5.
So, yes. Yeah. That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story with NMOSD and the journey that it took to get there and all that you've been through since. It's really wonderful to hear stories like yours, and I really appreciate you being vulnerable and open to sharing. And before we finish up, is there anything else you'd like to share about your story, about your journey, or anything at all?
No, I want to thank SRNA and you for giving me this opportunity, because it's weird looking back on it. Like when I was going through it, I thought this is never going to change. This is going to take me, it's going to be forever. This is my life forever. And it's only been, like now I say, it's only been 5 years, where if 5 years ago you would have said to me, it's going to take 5 years, I would have been like, are you kidding? 5 years? Oh my gosh. You know, mm-hmm. It's just, and I thank all the organizations for putting out this information for us to have access to it. You mm-hmm. don't have to be a doctor or, you know, medically inclined to find this information or find these groups. Mm-hmm. And that's amazing. So as you're going through this, no matter what your struggles are, don't forget that there are resources out there. And okay, maybe you might need a little bit of help finding them, but they're out there.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Yes. Yeah. And thank you for sharing.
Thank you to our Ask the Expert podcast sponsors, Amgen, Alexion AstraZeneca Rare Disease, and UCB. Amgen is focused on the discovery, development, and commercialization of medicines that address critical needs for people impacted by rare, autoimmune, and severe inflammatory diseases. They apply scientific expertise and courage to bring clinically meaningful therapies to patients. Amgen believes science and compassion must work together to transform lives. Alexion AstraZeneca Rare Disease is a global biopharmaceutical company focused on serving patients with severe and rare disorders through the innovation, development, and commercialization of life-transforming therapeutic products. Their goal is to deliver medical breakthroughs where none currently exist, and they are committed to ensuring that patient perspective and community engagement is always at the forefront of their work. UCB innovates and delivers solutions that make real improvements for people living with severe diseases. They partner with and listen to patients, caregivers, and stakeholders across the healthcare system to identify promising innovations that create valuable health solutions.